This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Thank you. It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol. The following program is brought to you by Carol Cox. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KWAI staff and management.
All right, good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. That was Mr. Louis DeFish, or Louis DiNolfo. And Mr. DiNolfo is in the studio with me today. He is a absolutely world-renowned, actually, carver, bone carver and what have you, but an avid bone fisherman, or fly fisherman, I should say. And he and his son, Joaquin, bearing the same last name, run a guide service out in around the islands here, right?
Yeah, mostly Kehi Lagoon, but we go other places if it's not fishing really well.
Mm-hmm. So, and he's going to share some of the experiences with this recent molasses spill, and to hear him tell it. There is a drastic change, and I actually went out with him. You may have seen it on Hawaii News Now. They ran a piece of he and his son out there on the flats, and you heard him play the molasses blues. So I thought I'd ask him to come in and share us the full story and give us the full, uninterrupted version of the molasses blues. And how appropriate. Louis, thank you for joining me and welcome aboard.
Oh, thanks. No problem. Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, so if you would, can you, I know they got their coffee now. They now know that I've warned them that it's some good music. So, and as an earlier show in Hawaiian Potpourri, I'm the guy from Mississippi. But you molasses and mud is commonalities is something in your blood in Mississippi. So if I could, Louis, and we'll get back to conversation here, but this is the molasses blues.
All right, the molasses blues. Let's have a go. I've only done this like two times already, so I might forget the words. I got the molasses blues. They done killed all my fish. Got the molasses blues, 'cause they done killed all my fish. I'm gonna send a letter to Matson and give him my expensive wish. Well, a pipe broke in the harbor. It spilled a Kehi Lagoon. There was dead fish floating everywhere. Well, man, it looked like gloom. I got the molasses blues, 'cause they done killed all my fish. I got the molasses blues. There won't be no fish on my dish.
All right.
That's the short version. Now,
all right.
You know, Matson's been very friendly, but I was thinking if they weren't so friendly, I would turn it into a ballad, a protest ballad.
Well, thanks for sharing that bit with us. Yeah, Louis the Fish. We'll refer to him as Louis the Fish today, and but the name is Louis DiNolfo. And as I said earlier, he and his son Joaquin runs a charter service business by special appointment and what have you. And it's worldwide. You get people from Japan and everywhere because of the.
Yeah.
Hawaii, at least Oahu here, out at Kehi Lagoon and around the island, offer a good quality bonefish fisheries.
Yep,
it's for recreation. So go ahead and tell us, and if you would share with us what you witnessed with this molasses spill, and as you've said, Mattson has been very good with you so far.
Very cooperative.
And cooperative. Yeah. And on the drive in, I heard it on another show that the jet skiers were complimenting that they had a meeting with him, and you had a meeting with Mattson as well.
Yes, I had a meeting with their claims adjuster, and he was a great guy. I knew him from before in American Samoa, but that was a good little meeting. We had a meeting down at La Mariana restaurant right on Kahi Lagoon. Mm-hmm. Had great lunch. Mm-hmm. But the bone fishing here has been going on for quite a long time. Some of the pioneers of the bone fishing here are the Nervous Waters Fly Shop. It's the only actual fly shop in the entire state of Hawaii. So it's up on Waialae Avenue. So besides the few guides that are here, there aren't that many guides here, really. There's quite a lot of people here that fly fish for bonefish, too. Mm-hmm. And Kahi Lagoon is one of the prime spots. In my opinion, it's the prime spot because we have it really wired, so we know right where to go. We have lots of little posses and places we can stand or take people or wade around and know where we're going to find them, you know. But so it's a bit of a worry because I think it's going to be it might be long-term affected by what
now,
we saw.
This is a catch-and-release fisheries, correct?
Most fly fishermen release everything, period. But bonefish in particular, fly fishermen we get, they won't kill them. They just want us to hold it up, or they hold it up, we take a photo, and then they unhook it, let it go.
Mm-hmm. So you're in mostly fly and what have you.
Yeah, we do both fly and spinning gear. Sometimes we use bait. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we actually catch the live bait on the flat.
Now, as you and I and your son and others walk out there on this little mini survey that we were doing, you folks shared with us, and Joaquin was talking about the decline. We didn't see for that entire period one single live mantis shrimp, which is a staple for a bait that's one of your top choice bait.
That's what the bonefish want to eat. Mm-hmm. Mantis shrimp and crabs is what they're really after. And we saw only dead crabs, mostly small dead crabs. Mm-hmm. And we saw one or two or three live crabs. Mm-hmm. And they were the bigger ones that are like 5 or 6 inches long. The little ones weren't around at all. And no, we didn't see any mantis shrimp alive at all. Mm-hmm. And we found a few dead ones, I think, and that was it. But the mantis shrimp actually live in little holes. When you spook them, they dive into their little holes, and they're kind of hard to get out of there. So you have to catch them when their tide is super low, like a couple of inches of water.
Right.
And then you catch them out in the open, and if you're quick enough, you can get them in a scoop net. Mm-hmm. I'm no good at it, but my son is really good at it. And he was saying that he in a space of an area about the size of even a bedroom or two, he could get 5 or 10 of them in no time. Mm-hmm. And here we walked 200, 300, 400 yards of flat that day.
In circles.
Walked all over that whole area, part of Triangle Flat, and we didn't see any at all. So that bodes not well for the future of that flat. And I don't know. I haven't had a chance because they've shut down the harbor, so I haven't had a chance to walk around the other flats. But the other flats are Mokuwea and Rat Island, and the airport runway is another place where sort of iffy place to fish. You're not really supposed to be fishing there, but
Now, you did, in fact, during the visit there, you hooked, at least you caught one and released it, one bonefish. And and if you folks are interested in seeing what Louis looks like, and especially you ladies out there, his wife probably won't appreciate this, but take a gander there at carolcox.com. We posted some pictures up of Louis and his son and out there on the flats, and you get an idea of what we're talking about. But walking that area was quite revealing. I mean, it is, from a scientific standpoint, an environmental standpoint, it is the rookery or the nursery for many a species because the larvae, the eggs, and it plays safe haven for the mantis shrimp, the small crabs. But we didn't see a single small crab alive. We did, as you say, we saw... I filmed three live crabs. Well, I take that back, four. And that was in the upper part of the flats in the mangrove. But other than that, it was a desert, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. And the big worry is when the molasses spilled, they show something on TV pouring molasses into a glass of salt water.
Right.
And it sank straight to the bottom. So I'm thinking, well, okay, then it's going to go into the channels. Mm-hmm. But apparently what it did is it blanketed the channels all right and probably killed everything underneath it because it creates a lack of oxygen because of an algae bloom or whatever. But I think that there must have been some kind of a turnover of oxygen-depleted water that also affected the shallow water as well, because that's probably what killed all that stuff on that reef.
Well, dissolved oxygen is there in the water, and when you have molasses leaking out for days, if not a couple of, or a year at least, now that revelation that there was a document where they have been told a year ago that it was leaking.
Oh, that's right. I heard
and,
that,
and
too.
And then they were were found to be leaking again by the state DOT. And DOT did absolutely nothing. So, again, I think theoretically, I'm speaking from theory here, is that, yes, it hits the bottom, and I poured some in a glass, and the density and the viscosity of it changes because of the coolness. If it's cold, it's, you know, it gets thicker.
Yeah.
But I think some of the contributing factors to dispersing that and having a greater impact was that area is active for vessels coming in, boats, the fishing boats, the patrol boats, the barges, the tugs, the big ships. So it was inevitable that it would cause a greater impact rather than just going over the bottom. But what we saw out there at the flats was an actual layer. Joaquin removed, just pushed back some of the, with his foot, pulled back, and you could see a brownish or goldish hay-colored layer of sand. And then when you got up out of the water area, where it's sometimes, it didn't have that layer. You could see it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, while you guys were walking and exploring the surface, I was casting with a fly rod and a long leader and a heavy fly into the channel, so just to see if I could catch something. So obviously there were some bonefish hanging around,
right?
Because I hooked two and landed one, and I only fished for about, I don't know, less than 30 minutes, I would think, total.
Yeah. Because you were walking around. And less than
I did a bunch of walking with you, too, once I saw that what I saw, that there was nothing really to see on the flats. Mm-hmm. Everything was dead. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, let's just have a little experiment and and cast a fly out there and see what happens. And they were there, and they were hungry. So I think their food has been depleted everywhere, the bottom of the channels and on the flat as well. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm worried about.
Well, I think we all should be worried, and I'm troubled by this recent this statement by they're glowing over the fact that the water is clear now.
Yeah.
And I would say, as I've said all along, I had some criticism of the state in the beginning of this process because they were handling it like it was a gentleman's agreement. I always believe in the interest as a regulatory body, you should go out with your sampling kits, with your gloves, with your overalls on and coveralls, with an ice chest, water samples, fish samples, chain of custody, because you just might learn that it wasn't an accident, and you might just learn that there will be a paper trail to show that they knew that it was leaking all along. So now that case is pretty much blown as far as the state is concerned, because chain of custody, I mean, if Matson want to put up a big fight, they can say, well, show us the evidence.
Mm.
And between you and me, I'm still trying to figure out how did they arrive at 25,000 fish.
I think that's what they actually collected. I think that they actually collected that, because I heard they have them in a freezer somewhere.
Right.
I'm waiting for them to go through them by species, because I was just curious as to know how many bonefish died.
Right.
But, I did see a photo of a little small bonefish, which we never catch these little 6-inch bonefish, you know, baby ones.
Yeah.
But I did see a photo of one dead that they found out there, so I just, that makes me worry, too, that there was, you know, small juveniles that were part of it all.
Well, let's see here. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Well,
Hello?
Am I on?
You have a question?
Yes, I do.
Already, go ahead.
I'd like to know if the Hawaiian people can sue Metzen for messing up our natural resource, which is the bottom of the ocean of that harbor.
Is it this one here? No. Oh, it's not plugged in. That one's not plugged in. This one here, this one's plugged in.
You were broken up a little bit. What was the... repeat it if you could, if Matson was responsible.
This is Uncle Joe.
Yeah. Go ahead again with your question. It was broken
up. Wondering if Matson can be sued for by Native Hawaiians damaging the natural resource for the bottom of the harbor. Because natural resources is anything on resources to the native.
Mm-hmm.
And the natural resource at the bottom of the harbor is the seaweed, the coral, and the fish.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's covered up by molasses and it's all over the place, does the Hawaiian people have an opportunity of suing?
Well, again, we don't give legal advice, but we can give you our opinion. And if I was Native Hawaiian or depending on this area for subsistence, or if I understand it, it's some of this is the submerged lands is Hawaiian lands. I don't know all the rules. But I would say, as they say, sometimes anyone can sue. You can sue a ham sandwich, you know, the old saying. But in this case, I would explore that, and you would have to get people to be, you know, the victim. And also, because Matson has acknowledged that, but here's what I would say. I would contact the EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers, because I'm just going to be very blunt with you as far as this whole process when it comes to the state. The Abercrombie administration did exactly what they did with the needles and medical waste, not a darn thing, sit there and just shook hands and smiled with their Aloha shirt. So what I would say is I would recommend you go to the EPA or whoever is going to be prosecuting this case, because from my experience, the Clean Water Act and all in federal law says whoever knowingly, and so that being the case, this is a knowing violation, as I had speculated early on when it first started on the first day. You know, document, evidence, chain of custody, treat it as if it's a criminal case, and voila, it is, in my opinion. So I would say, as a restitution, as part of the constructive sentencing, or if there is an agreement that the Hawaiian community or those that depend on this area that are impacted, even Louis, I think, could approach the EPA, and as part of a constructive sentencing or whatever they design in court or agree to put out money to recover or lessen the impact or mitigate some of the negative impacts.
Thank you.
All righty. Thank you, Uncle Joe.
Yeah, well, you just... it's hard to say what the long-term effects are going to be. So, and there are people that use that whole area besides the few fishing guides that go out there.
Mm-hmm.
There are people that come out in their kayaks and fish, and so I see people fishing there all the time. They troll through the area, so it's going to be difficult to see. We're waiting first for them to open it up,
mm-hmm.
and when they open it up again, then we'll start fishing, and mm-hmm. it won't take long to. You know, a week or two or three to understand if it's been depleted of mm-hmm. the fish that we're after anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's some of the observations that I observed out there made. One, we impacted not just the fish that we see, and as you saw that picture that I took of the little bone fish, but the other smaller fish, and then the what's the one they use for they go out and catch them in the harbors and use them for aku. But that bait
fish.
Nehu.
Nehu. Yeah.
Well, you know.
And sardines, nehu, exactly. Halalu. They're all there. There's plenty of them still there.
And without a doubt, they're a fish, though, right? They're
yeah.
So I would say, I observed just in Pier 38, this is why I'm frowning on this idea that it's 25,000 fish. Just the nehu alone, I saw 25,000 nehu in the harbor. Unless now, does that constitute a fish?
Oh, yeah, yeah. were they dead in the harbor?
Yeah, dead, and they were congregating and balling up in balls, dying and just, you know.
I never had a good chance to go into the harbor because you can't fish in the harbor anyway, so I just didn't take the time to go in there. We did go out with our boat within a few days after the spill. Mm-hmm. And we were intending to go outside the airport and dive, and the water was discolored all in Kehi Lagoon. You could see the brown color, and then it was also discolored outside as well. So we ended up turning around and coming back in and didn't go out that day. But we didn't see many dead fish. We saw a few.
On that day, because the fish will, having very few, they will sink down. Or at nighttime, they go down and bed down, if those are still... But once they go down, you know, they belly up because their gills are coated, and they're going to lay there until they build up the biological gases and all. Then they pop to the top.
Yeah.
But when you see them gasping for air, that's what. But one of the things, here's a little trick, an observation that I made. I watched this, Louis. Initially, when it started, it was they quantified the amount as 223,000 gallons. Now, the average citizen operates in ounces, pints, quarts, and gallons, right? Common person. But what they decided to do is to trick you psychologically is to come up and say 1,400 ton, right?
Mm-hmm.
14 is less than 223,000. These are tricks that you see as we go along.
Oh, yeah.
You understand? And it's a little trickery. This is the way they do it, right? So it's very interesting how this thing has unfolded and played out.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just, you know, I actually feel a little bit sorry for the DLNR because they're understaffed. They need more funding on every level, you know. And I know they have really good people working for them, and I know that the chair, William Isla, is a great guy. You couldn't have a better head for the DLNR. But it's hard for them to get a handle on things like this, or just get a handle on all the problems, the poaching, the netting, and everything else. This state really needs a lot more money put into that area, resource management. And that's my opinion anyway, you know.
Yeah. And that's good. We know that. I've always said if you only have one, he should have been down there at the docks with an ink pen, camera, and gloves and a chain of custody. Because here's what's going to happen. If it becomes a contentious process legally, if I was Mattson, I'd bone up and say, well, we'll offer you this amount. What is the impact? What does DLNR say? Do we have any substantial pictures? The video that you see is shot by a citizen. The fish that you saw recovered, the bulk of them were recovered by a private contractor. I didn't see him make one location, document what fish came from where, what species. Didn't see that. It's a tedious process. But Mattson is afforded the same rights and protection under the Constitution as anybody. So I think right now, from the standpoint of the state, they're out of it, both the state. And they never intended to be in it. And if they had $18 billion to squander a day, they still wouldn't be there because they already have money that they squander. And that's not bad-mouthing them. But we don't get these occasions to present themselves often. As this one does, and then when you see nothing, you have to think. Well, I should have heard immediately. Recruiting you, for example, this is what we would have done in the past. At agencies that I worked for, we would say, "Are you available? Can you take one of our men out, or can we accompany you to observe, we want to quantify the impact. And we want to do two things. See, you're left on your own to negotiate with Mattson.
Yeah.
If they talk to you today and, you know, and buy you a ham sandwich and do all of that and, you know, or pancakes and molasses.
Yeah.
And then one day they just decide, you know, we just don't want to accept what you're giving.
Yeah.
You're out. You're the impact, you know.
I decided on my own to go out there when I took you out there.
Right.
But I did email William Isla, and I got a good positive response from him, and he told me to let him know what happened.
Right.
And so I kind of had permission, because I didn't realize that the harbor was actually closed to what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't supposed to be getting out of the boat and wading around.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, I think a day or two later, I found out that they're also worried about flesh-eating bacteria and things like that. So,
since you returned, did you, like me, did you start turning brown and your hair curling up?
Or No. I didn't have any flesh-eating bacteria. Fortunately,
I
could use a little few if I could target the areas that I wanted eaten up. Yeah, I could definitely lose about 50 pounds. You know,
but this is again, these impacts. I saw people fishing, and a couple of days, a week later, as you said, the sardines were massive, and the people were out there snagging and fishing and catching, and so.
Well, they weren't catching. I went to where we launched, the marine education area, and I asked all those people if they were catching much, because there was a huge school of sardines,
right.
And they were all using live sardines for bait.
Uh-huh.
You couldn't ask for better bait if there's any papillo around, you know.
Right, right.
And they said there were hardly anybody getting a bite.
Yeah, well, what I did see, they weren't getting the papillo, the ulu, or anything, but when they were using damashi, the little plastic on the snag line, jerking.
Yeah.
But what I did see, unfortunately, this is a different subject, the hammerheads, they're just having an impact on the young hammerheads, and they're swallowing the bait, and then they're taking them and sticking them with the knives and throwing them back or leaving them on the shoreline.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well,
and you know, what do you do, right? We're wasteful.
Yeah.
But the people were, what was it? Thursday, I think. It was Thursday that I observed people out there. I took some pictures, and they were catching quite a few. There was a massive school of sardines that had come in.
Yeah.
I wonder what would have happened. Well, a lot of them were impacted, because some were in and were impacted with that.
Mm.
But I guess these came in later.
Came in from the outside, and that's only the marine education area, so that's already the outskirts of Kehi Lagoon.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what inner part, like Kapalama Canal and down where they keep the canoes. Another friend of mine went down there. She's a paddler, and she thought it smelled really bad. She said it actually smelled like a dead whale in that area. They turned around and left. But I haven't had the time to go and do all this on my own and go and check it out. But when we went out, the water was nice and clear. It was very clear.
Mm-hmm.
It was about as clear as I ever see it in there.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that there's not damage done, you know.
Right. Well, what happened, you and I were talking while we were out there, the impact, we tend to go with, well, how did it impact? Well, if you can't see it, it didn't have an impact. Well, but scientifically, this time of the year, for example, I observed many crabs with eggs, with their massive eggs, females bearing eggs. So you killed that, in that harbor, you killed that generation. The egg-bearing females and males, and some of I got video of this. You ever see crabs swimming in midwater?
I know what happens. Yeah,
that's highly unusual unless they're chasing food that's floating. But they were suspended and just struggling, and so you see them with these massive eggs, clusters of eggs. So you kill the adult. Now you've killed the eggs, right?
Yeah.
And then the substrate, which is coated or covered with, as we saw, a lot of dead plants and limu out there, just brown and fading now, you know.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Yeah.
And so you're taking probably three generations, and then not to say that it won't establish itself, but if the bacteria set in first, and not to mention the coral, the coral impact. So I was just a little, I started to talk earlier. I was a little concerned, bothered when they say, oh, the water is clear now.
You know, it took a while.
It took a week or so.
But
that's, that's like saying my roof is still standing, but my house burned out. They don't go hand in hand.
Yeah.
All along, I know it's good to be positive,
yeah,
a positive thinker, but how then do we address the overall impact? And are we left with, okay, the water's clear, so minimal mitigation, right?
Yeah.
We need to see a complete addressment of all aspects of this in order to make come back and make things, bring them back to the level they are. But I know, you take, for example, the Mount of Coral. Remember that case on Maui where the guys were, the recreationists, were anchoring? And I think they were threatened with $100,000+ for dropping their anchor on the coral.
Damaging coral.
Right.
Yeah.
Now imagine, what do you think the fine's going to be, and who's going to quantify that would be for Mattson, for example?
It's hard to say.
Yeah.
It's really, you could have this thing called 20/20 hindsight, you know. Ideally, it would have been a great idea if somebody was really on the ball, maybe some university scientist or DLNR. As soon as that spill happened in the harbor, mm-hmm, before it bled into Kehi Lagoon, if somebody went out there with scuba gear and photographed the bottom of all those channels,
mm-hmm,
then, and the flats too, and mm-hmm, got some idea, like did a count of, yeah, what sort of life was down there. And then, because eventually the plume spread out down along Lagoon Drive and up into Kapalama Canal, but they would have had some time, but they would have had to be really thinking ahead, you know. And
thinking ahead and using their heads, because what would happen in this case. So I think even the best plans would be all for naught, because the records show now that they knew it was leaking a year ago, and then they didn't fix it. Right. So I say that, may every man stand up and own his mistakes. And we don't want to look backwards other than to the point that if you knew that you had a problem and it was leaking, then you have an obligation to. And I think Mattson, they've been, I would never want to be Mattson. In a moment, when the other day, when they showed that letter on TV, and the guy's going, "Well, it's rough when you get caught lying, or not lying, or just claiming you didn't know something, and someone show you something different than."
Yeah,
I think that in itself is a punishment.
Yeah.
But Uncle Joe, you there? I hear you tapping in the background. You got any comment?
Well, the only thing is, when we talked about laying the cable between islands to bring electricity from Maui and the Big Island, we were talking about natural resources, the laying of cable on the bottom of the ocean. That's our natural resources. Mm-hmm. And as a result, the same thing is happening there, like in Waianae, with the dumping on natural resources again.
Right. So, Louis here, I mean, his impacts are very noticeable. I mean, for
not being able to fish for your table.
Well, not only that, he is going out, and it's a business for him where he charges, and people come. Where you get people from Japan?
From
all over.
U.S.,
right?
Europe, I've had them from all over. New Zealand and Australia lately quite a lot, because it's the dollar is good for them, so they come up here on holiday now. And New Zealand has probably more fly fishermen per capita than any other country in the world, so they love to go for bonefish. And mm-hmm, the places,
and Carol, if you're an entrepreneurship and it affects your business, absolutely, again.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you, I believe that Louis' business, as it stands, what I saw out there the other day, I think the carrying capacity for that area for a time being is going to be minimal, because if there's no food, the bonefish are not going to congregate there. They're not going to eat one another, and they are very specific in the larvae that they may be eating, or the small crabs that are right now are depleted to such a low number. And that's the thing. So we're going to have to see new adults move in and start to lay eggs.
And it might be sharks.
Yeah. Well, now there may be sharks.
Yeah. I mean, how many shark bites has there been ever since Billy Weaver down in Waimanalo? That was the only first shark bite that ever happened in Hawaii back in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, we get this sharks starting to come in.
Mm-hmm.
It's all part and parcel of the whole greed, the need for greed.
Mm-hmm. I think I heard about Billy Weaver when I first came here. I came in the early 60s. And that, or the period immediately after that young guy dying, there was a statewide frenzy of killing sharks.
Well,
and they pretty much depleted the shark population here. And then I lived on Molokai in Halawa Valley for 2 years, and I was diving almost every day. Hardly ever see any sharks.
Well, the sharks are Amakua.
Mm-hmm.
It was our guardian. I remember my brother going out spearfishing, and whenever the shark came up to him, he turned around. The next fish that he speared, he turned around and gave it to his shark guard.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that's what the culture was all about. And you in Halawa Valley, Louis, my God.
Mm-hmm.
My God. Are you talking about getting close to the culture? Absolutely.
Well, yeah, I was basically a hermit there for 2 years and lived off my three prong pretty much. And I was out every day. I dove around Halawa, Pelikuno, Wailau, all those areas. And
oh, my God.
Never saw a shark. I mean, I see very few white tips. But that was immediately after the shark-killing frenzy that went on here. And so a lot of sharks were killed, and it takes a long time for the sharks to come back. And now since then, the 70s, the 80s, everybody's more eco-sensitive, and they leave the sharks alone. Well, now their sharks are being left alone. They're getting bigger, and there's more of them, and so people are getting bitten. That's my take on it. I think
you're absolutely right, because
there's a lot of sharks.
That's the same thing they're talking about in Florida with crocodile.
Yep, and the same thing happening in Florida with bull sharks, and the same thing's happening on the West Coast with great whites.
That's right.
They're now eco-sensitive. You're not supposed to kill them. Leave them alone, and now they're there, and they're going to eat you if they get a chance. So.
That's the difference between the kapu system and conservation today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's another subject that we need to talk about, Carol.
Yeah.
Kapu system and the conservation corps.
Well, I think if the kapu system is one thing, who's going to enforce it is another. The system we have today is not enforced. Our game wardens are going home and go to bed at 4:30 in the evening.
Konohiki is going to enforce it.
Yeah, but I mean, we have to be realistic, and say what it is, what the circumstances are, and not skirt around them. The reality is, the legislators gave money, and an audit, as a result of an audit, defined what was needed. They gave money, and you still have the slacking of the troops and the use of the troops and the use of the existing resources. So it's inexcusable.
And in many cases, like Bill Isla, in many cases, they're overworked, underpaid, and understaffed.
Well, I understand all of that. It sounds like we want to be apologetic. look, if you're going to be realistic, you need to call it what it is.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of inept leadership up top through the governor who should have put some money on the table. Hiring Bill Isla is one thing. But if you don't agree that you can get more money so that the officers can go work in the evening.
Absolutely.
I submit this.
Hiring the carpenter is good, but without the tools and necessary equipment, you can't do the job.
I submit this. If we believe that they're doing a good job, then I want to know, why is it that when there's a movie set, there's a game warden? When there's a fireworks, there's a game warden. When there's a special event, there's a game warden. But when the opening season for lobster, when the MLCD is open, and you don't have that kind of intense patrol or regulatory body, and you don't have them at night, and you have nets out there, I have to beg amongst all of you is to say, we look at administrators as our friends, but if we're truly concerned with the resources, we have to inject the reality. Fight for the money, scratch the legislators, and commit to saying, you know, go back to the unions and work with the unions and change these hours, because as a poacher, they sit there and they know if, you know, when the cat's away, the mice will play. And
yeah. I think the the punishments here are really slack.
Mm-hmm.
I live in New Zealand. I lived there for 20 years, and they are very strict down there. And I was down the river fishing in New Zealand for trout, and just heading down the river, here comes three new immigrants. I think they were Taiwanese. They each had three trout. That's the limit. And I congratulated them. They didn't speak much English. I recognized their car in the car park because it was a car I'd never had enough money to buy. It's about a $60,000 van. And I went fishing, and as I was leaving, they're going back again. And they already had their limit.
Double tapping.
Yeah, so I called the game warden. He went down, got them, took them to the motel, found out they had hundreds of fish in the motel, and confiscated a $60,000 van on the spot.
Yep.
That's standard procedure in New Zealand.
Yep.
Would that ever happen here?
Oh.
I don't know.
Well,
you know?
This is what I say. Whether they had one guy with $1, he has a uniform on, he's an officer. We should utilize him to the max.
Yep.
But we're not. So I think, and that's not being critical, if they can't hear that. And I mean, we see a decrease in the population of fish. We see the abuses. And we just need to man up, put more efforts in these efforts, and the criticism never going to stop. You, as a game warden, you can never please everybody. Yeah. But if you're flying that flag, the guy who's marginally tempted to go out there and take more lobsters than he, or lobsters out of season, or moy out of season, or fish in an area that's closed, no, they're borderline crooks too, you know, or poachers. The guy that's going to poach for a living, he's going to go anyway, whether you had a million officers.
Yeah.
You know, Carol, if I come in Ramanala Pier, right outside, I mean, by Rabbit Island,
mm-hmm.
I come inside and I got a green turtle, I get arrested.
Oh, yeah.
But you know what? We brought it to the neighborhood board about green turtle shells in the rubbish cans right there at that same pier.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing is done.
Right.
But if I come in with a green turtle, and I know when to make the green turtle because it's according to our culture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just like lobster, just like every other thing. We had that couple system. Hey, you were taken for disciplinary action.
Right.
And today, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You absolutely right.
Yeah.
Absolutely right.
Yeah, that's the problem. And is I don't think it's really the DLNR and their enforcement staff. I think they're trying to do the best they can.
Oh, but no about that, and I totally agree.
It goes to the courts, and the courts don't take resource management seriously. That we actually, in my opinion, we need a court system that deals with resource management and a strict, you know, strict adherence to the punishment.
Well, let me chime in on that. Let me leave you impart this knowledge. It's the DLNR is failing. The DLNR is failing. I'll repeat it. The DLNR is failing. They're good people. Right? We got to take away that. Administrators, good administrators, will court the court, will court the city prosecutor, will court the U.S. attorney, and become familiar with the system and learn what it is that they need to do, what elements in committing. When they detect a crime, you don't just walk in and tell a guy, okay, give me what you got, and open your trunk up and hand me that. See, what we're not disclosing here, and we don't have the opportunity, is that we hear a lot of times the courts are throwing out cases. Of course they should, because there's a thing called the Constitution. If you're not guided and steered by the Constitution in your operation, guess what's going to happen? City prosecutor is going to dismiss or decline a nolo prosecute. So I think if we all come to the terms that the problem is it's a dysfunctional system, and I can tell you that it is, and the courts, if you look at just the Gillnet law, if you're caught with this and. So you go into court, and they look at it and go, no, your law is written crazy. So it is the failure on the part of the administrators up and down the ladder. The attorney general, state attorney general, is assigned to DLNR. If they repeatedly go into courts, I mean, and let me ask you this. How often do you see DLNR on the top of the news with any real stories? Most of the time, they don't even want to go before the TV stations or the news. when in fact they should be educating people and educating the city prosecutor at the difficulty it is in trapping or catching a poacher. Mm-hmm. And then the prosecutor would then look favorably because he would say, okay, you abide by the Constitution when you seize this evidence and you're consistent with the Constitution, so, and you're observing the rights of the people. And your law will button that up. Go back to the U.S. Attorney General, and we'll rewrite the laws to address those things that are loose. But we don't see that, so therefore we stand back and all we're left with, he's a good guy, and this guy's a good guy. But the problem is the resources are taking it in the shorts, so to speak, right?
Yeah, yep.
And in the end, the people lose.
Yeah, and I guess, is it criticism or is it just reality? What we need to do is to take the aspects, work with the fishing groups. Like, you have a fishing group there. In fact, give a plug for
that. Oh, yeah,
right,
well,
quick.
I'm in a club called Trout Unlimited. Mm-hmm. We're the Waikahe-Olu chapter of Trout Unlimited. We're the only Trout Unlimited chapter in this state. Some states have many chapters where there's a lot more trout. But we exist because of the trout on Kauai, Kokei. And we do whatever we can to enhance or help the state or help anybody to just keep that fishery alive, because mm-hmm. it's really a unique fishery. So yes. We've, in the last few years, we've done it. We've encouraged them to reopen the hatchery, and they've had two fantastic opening days. I've been up there twice in the last 2 years at the reservoir, in Pu'uloa Reservoir, and this. There are a few thousand people catching great trout. Mm-hmm. It was really, it's been great. And we're working with them now, trying to get to permission to help stock some of the three streams up there that are on the Camp 10 road that you can drive to by four-wheel drive. So that's one of our goals, is to get the trout back in those streams. That we did a study over 10 years ago that proved that the trout don't impact anything native in the streams. They eat pretty much introduced insect, an introduced caddisfly larva. So if we can get good stocking, those streams are also very vulnerable to poachers. Mm-hmm. So the DLNR doesn't have the manpower. They will stock the stream by driving down the road with the truck and dropping them in the ford. Mm-hmm. And they'll all get down, go washed into the next pool down, and you'll have 1,000 trout sitting there. And somebody will come along with a gill net and get them all and take them. That's happened already.
Right.
And sell them in town. So mm-hmm. we want to spread them out, have our volunteer members walk up the streams with a knapsack with 100 trout and put 3 or 4 in each pool, kind of thing. So spread them out. And
Or take a helicopter and transfer them, drop them as you
That's,
go.
That
you,
used to be done, but the cost of helicopters now is pretty outrageous.
I used to work for Cal Fish and Game in transplanting trout.
Yeah.
Up in the upper mountainous areas, in Mammoth and Red, all of those areas.
Yeah, that's a good way of doing it, but we just don't have
the
money.
And then fly over and dive down and pull the lever and they rain down.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, Louis can be reached at louisthefish.com.
Yeah.
And again, he does a traditional Polynesian hand-carved jewelry, and you really should see it. What's your phone number, Louis, that people can call you for fish?
808-741-5622. And we have two websites. We have louisthefish.com, and it's spelled L-O-U-I-E, in case you don't know. And then we also have a website my son has, and that's called bonefishhonolulu.com.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a Facebook page called Bonefish Honolulu, so you can go on that and have a look. And I have two Facebook pages with lots and lots of photographs of bonefish, local fish, trout, and everything. One of mine is Louis the Fish Dinolfo, and the other one is Louis the Fish with the word artist in parentheses. So,
mm-hmm.
so you can go on my Facebook page.
Well, if you want to hold for 5 minutes or so, and then we'll come back. Uncle Joe, thank you. If you want to call back, we're going to be changing the subject here, but I'm going to keep Louis in, and I want to get some more information on his art and what have you. We'll see you shortly.
Hey, thank you.
Aloha. Yeah, thank you, Louis. That was good. We'll take a break and we'll be right back, folks.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu. Ha ha ha!
That was Fish and Blues.
Yeah, Louis the Fish.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Okay. Hey, good morning again, and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show, second half. I have Louis the Fish, and I'm always happy to talk with him, and as I talked in the early hour, he took us out, took me and took out KGMB or Hawaii News Now. You folks may have seen that. If you didn't see it, go to Hawaii News Now and you can see Louis there and him fishing and hooking up a nice bonefish. For those that of you are fishermen that go looking for bonefish and never catch one, Louis is actually a guide for bonefish, so if you're interested in fly fishing, which is something I don't fish anymore, but at one time I enjoyed fly fishing and using flies up in the Yellowstone or wherever I was. But it's a catch and release. So I know some say, well, it's still sticking the fish in the mouth and hooking them, and I'm sure Peter would probably going to call this show and be told go to hell, you know. But
I don't think PETA makes much headway in Hawaii.
Well, you know, I mean, they have a good cause, but sometimes I don't want to see anything hurt, and I'm a fool for animals myself, but and that's why I stopped fishing and hunting and all of that. But those that do, they're the bone fishing. When you're out there, you tie your own flies.
Pretty much all of them, yeah.
And I mean, you have some beauties. And so, again, if someone wanted to locally here, they don't have to be foreign. If they want to learn how to fly fish, or if some of you out there got an interest in giving a gift or something to your husband or a relative coming to town, and I think Louis, I'm not endorsing Louis, but I watched him within 30 minutes hook two bonefish, and this is when conditions were bad, when there was molasses suspended.
The molasses had just left.
But I think what it was, I saw you with the pancake. I saw you pull out your pocket some pancake and put it on the hook.
that's one way of doing it, yeah, with that molasses there. And they say the fish are going to taste sweeter now. I don't know.
This is where we go across the line. We begin, you know, such a serious matter. But reality, I think that if any of you are interested when things get going again, your number again is
741-5622.
And then is one of the situations with the fisheries. For you fishermen out there, Louis is, he sent me, there's a DLNR fishing group that Mr. Isles, is he sponsoring or he's participating in it?
He has a monthly meeting with anglers. Mm-hmm. That he discusses anything, really, pretty much.
Okay.
And I think it's on the 26th at 6 to 8 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
I sent you an email about
it. And it's
it.
In the Kalani Moku building, right? Yeah. At the main DLNR office,
yeah, as
right?
soon as you park downstairs, you come up on the stairs, and you come into the main big entrance, and it should be right there. And I think it's room 131 on the right. I've been to a couple of them, actually.
So you fishermen out there that have issues or concerns or want to participate or learn more, and I think that you should attend these meetings. And this one here, here's some of the things. What is DLNR enforcement hotline, and will conservation officers respond off hours? And then this is the answers and questions that you sent me. What is the process for creating administrative rules with DLNR? So you guys discuss the whole litany of things, huh?
Yeah, this is the email put out by the DLNR. So mm-hmm. I went to the last one, and there was quite a few people there, and everybody had some issues that were talked about. You know, it was mm-hmm. very informative, I thought. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
So bottom fish restricted areas, you talk about those, the BFRAs.
Yeah.
And what do I have to do to submit a petition and all of that? Yeah. So you guys are covering everything, huh?
Well, they're very receptive to all the fishermen's concerns.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a matter of, you know, manpower as to what they can do about them or mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. legislation or whatever it takes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As well, far as people wanting to learn to fly fish, besides booking a guide, which is kind of expensive, mm-hmm. I have this club called Trout Unlimited. And anybody can go online and look under Trout Unlimited National mm-hmm. if they live here and join Trout Unlimited. I think it's about $35 a year. And they become a member of the Hawaii chapter automatically. Mm-hmm. And we do all sorts of stuff. We take kids fishing. We sponsor a group that goes to Kauai every year. And I'm the project lead for Project Healing Waters Fly Fishing. Mm-hmm. So we take wounded military guys fly fishing. Mm-hmm. And we take them to, we get permission from some great places where nobody can actually go and fish, like Kualoa Fish Pond. Mm-hmm. And we just had a day there on the 13th. We had about a dozen soldiers, and they caught lots of fish. They had a great time.
Yeah. Well, anyway, if you're out there and you're interested in any aspect of this, Louis' involvement and what have you, do call him. And then you go to carolcox.com, CarolCox.com, and you can. We'll have a link to his website. And anything else before we?
No, we covered every base.
Okay. Well, thank you, Louis. I appreciate it. If you want to hang loose here, I'm going to switch gears here and talk about some other issues. But keep us posted, and I'm going to try to get back out there to Kahi Lagoon and go out to the mud flats. I think they've now removed the signs saying it's safe. The health department decided to remove the signs now.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. Did that mean that they are going to lift the ban on Kahi Lagoon?
I need to drive down there and have a look because last time I was there, the DLNR had their enforcement boat out mm-hmm. there, so they were intending to get everybody off of Kahi Lagoon. So mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'll have to go and have a look.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you. If you want to hang loose with me here, feel free to do so. Let me see if this is.
I might slip off, but I'll listen a bit.
Good morning, caller. You have a comment, a question? Hello. Good morning, caller. You have a comment, a question?
Yo, what's up, Carol Cox?
Well, good morning. How are you, Jacob?
Anything? I'm good. What's up, Louis?
Hey, how's it?
Good. This is Jacob from Milani.
Alrighty.
Hey, Carol, you know I was at the Milani football game last night?
Okay.
We played against Campbell.
Well, I want to know who won. I did my Trojans win?
Are you a Trojans fan too?
Yeah.
Me and you are Trojans fans.
Yeah, I went to Eastside High School in Cleveland, Mississippi, and we were the Trojans.
Oh, really?
Yeah, black and gold.
You guys were the Trojans in Mississippi too?
Well, we're not that antiquated. Yeah, we have football teams.
Oh, wow. All right, because we won 42-21. Over Campbell, and this week.
Now, did you pay off the quarterback for Campbell to have him to throw a few interceptions or what? How
did I what? Yeah, did I pay off the quarterback for Campbell?
Okay.
Well. No, I didn't. I never paid off the quarterback for Campbell, but, like, Milani, our players are, like, awesome, you know? I mean, like, hey, Louis, you ever watched that Trojans football game?
No, I haven't, actually.
You never watched the Trojans football game?
I haven't actually been to many football games since my son graduated about 5 or 6 years ago from Kaimuki High School.
He played, your son was a Bulldog?
He played defensive end, but it was the year that they had just won the pennant or whatever the year before, so they kicked the whole team up into a higher bracket. And
only
like 22 guys came out for football. A lot of them came out, but not many had the grades. So they had the first game was against Kahuku with 22 guys from Kaimuki and 120 from Kahuku.
Oh!
So they got Kaimuki got a touchdown right away, and then they got they lost 41-6.
When did your son play football?
Well, it's 20. He's 25 now, so you have to do the math.
When did he play football? I think he played like in 2000.
Probably 7 years ago, right. I think. Yeah.
Yeah, like I mean, we've never played Kaimuki like this year, but I know like our homecoming is coming up next week, Hey, Carol, are you going to be at the homecoming game?
I don't know if I will be, but...
We're going to play against Lanahua.
Okay, maybe
you know what? You know who Lanahua is? You know what Lanahua is, right?
The Mules, man.
Yeah, the Mules. They're our arch rivals.
Right, well...
Because Melani, we're going to...
Yeah, anyway, Jacobs, I'm going to cut this short and get on. I got a couple things I want to cover, but thanks for calling and sharing with us. All right.
I'll talk to you next week.
Aloha.
Let's go. Coach.
All right. All righty. Anyway, I want to change gears here and on the Board of Water Supply. And we've had Mr. Ernest Lau on the show. And we've raised some many issues, and we wrote a piece, op-ed piece, in the Star Advertiser regarding Board of Water Supply. Here are some of the problems, and again, it's not about being first, but I want to reveal something to you that I know firsthand. I heard it firsthand from several workers of the Board of Water Supply. So not just one individual, but several. And these individuals would be fuel inspectors and just in general the workers in the office. And what I wanted to share with you is that, first of all, we'll start off, you know, they told us everything was good, like ice cream and cake there, and they assured us that they were responding to the complaints and what have you. Well, I think... if you really want to help fix this, and Kaiko Anderson went out and he introduced this bill, and his purpose, as always, what I see in this town, it's not for the good of the people, though that would sometimes be secondary or just a gratuitous benefit from their efforts, and that was to take the semi-autonomous status from Board of Water Supply and then move it into the city council. In other words, Board of Water Supply is squandering our money, and what we need to do is give it to the city council, and they really squander it. But again, without safeguards or measures. But let me let you hear something where this promise was that they were on top of things at Board of Water Supply. And these are notes now that someone read to me over a period of time here, and an email went out from the Board of Water Supply to retirees. So they're so desperate that they need to hire retirees to come in and man the phones. And then basically, it was, as you're well aware, the Board of Water Supply has been recently flooded with customer calls due to billing and other customer concerns. And they admitted in that email that this has led to poor customer service experience for our customers. That's out of the horse's mouth, but they told us during the visits, everything, and they tell you on the TV and all the news that everything's fine, hunky-dory. But the reality, it's not. That email spelled it out. And they are now trying to reach out and hire to help resolve this issue. They want to increase in the Board of Water Supply capacity to take more phone calls. For now, we're looking for retirees who would be willing to come back to the Board of Water Supply to help answer incoming customer phone calls as part of the operator pool on a limited term basis. Now, why wouldn't they hire permanent workers? And then why is Randy Pereira and the HGA or whoever the heck they are, these union guys, why are they agreeing with Board of Water Supply? You know, this goes back to what I said to you a couple times back. The union is corrupt, corrupt, corrupt in their approach when the workers can't get represented. And then they won't force the Board of Water Supply to stick to it and hire permanent workers. I guess that would create more unionized workers, which would then present a problem. They'd have a bigger voice. I don't know. But they've lied to us. They're not efficient. They're not responding to the customer calls. And that's just one aspect of what I want to share with you today on that little detail. And we'll preserve those notes because they are trying to get retirees to come back and work on a temporary basis to answer the phones because they are overwhelmed and have, and it's attributing to poor customer service. So they're going to hire these people to take phone calls, fill out the form that asks the customer's name, address, contact, forward the message to the customer care staff, who will then follow up with the customer. And if you're interested in this potential work on a paid full-time basis now, paid full-time basis, but it's a temporary. Wonder where your money went and why you think that every time you open your bill, it's higher and higher, and they're calculating and estimating and all of that. And they're telling you, well, we got the system in control now. Here we go. When an investigator, for example, this is the other part that's failing. And please listen up, because if you think you've seen people angry and annoyed by these high bills and all, what I'm going to share with you now is I heard it firsthand from top officials and workers. Investigators get a ticket to go out and investigate a complaint from a homeowner like yourself or me. It has that investigator receives that, and it has on that form that he gets of field investigation report has 10 to 11 previous readings and billing cycle on that sheet that he has for that address. And so what happens? He goes out, he or she goes out, and with that list, you would think it would be the same, that ticket that he got, the previous bill should be the same as a printout for the customer, right? Well, guess what? It's not the same. So, what is a computer? The computer is not matching the printout. But they gave the inspector the printout there at the office to go into the field. So where did that printout come from if the printout that they gave him is not accurate with the computer? So the field person goes out, knocks on the door, find out that the bills in the customer hold doesn't match the bill, the printout, or the printout from the computer. So where are they getting these numbers, folks? So has the computer been pre-programmed so that we would never be able to track it? Now, I understand also because of Ekaika Anderson's bill proposal and because of Ron Manor's proposal to have an auction audit, they, the Board of Water Supply, has initiated their own audit. And generally when that happens, that means they're going to see what they can cover up to make sure. Generally, this is what tend to happen, because if you're going to get an audit, I can understand you get everybody together and say we prepare for this audit, but they have their own in-house private audit occurring. So here you go. You know now that what they give the inspector is not accurate. He goes to the door and he received a copy of the person, the homeowner's bill, and it's not comparing to the note that the inspector has, and the inspector notes don't compare to the computer printout. This is not me theorizing this, folks. I heard it firsthand. So you go out and then you get a reading. No leaks match up. But you match up the serial number on the meter and you do all of that. And you confirm that it's the right meter for that house. You get all of that done. You get an actual return where you stand there physically and you look at the dial and you say, okay, I know exactly how much this meter is reading. You take that back and you enter it into the computer, and the computer rejects it. How did that happen? So what is really happening is a situation has developed where the right hand doesn't know what the left hand doing. The left hand did things that the right hand should have known, but now the right hand and the left hand is working together and concealing what it is that would really bust their chops. and find some of them in jail. And I believe this is where our federal oversight, there, because there's federal properties involved, citizens, I think the Attorney General should be involved, the State Attorney General should investigate this. I think the U.S. Attorney should investigate it, because this is, in my opinion, based on what I heard, sheer fraud, nothing else. All the way from top to bottom, it comes down to the workers. The actual reads, we don't really know how many or what percentage of these things happen when the field inspector goes out, inspects it, looks at an actual reading, and comes back and stick it in, and it's a different reading than they actually got. And it rejects it. So there's some hanky-panky going on here, and I don't know all the terminology and what is happening, but the AMRs and the CCBs and the software that caught up. So when you look at this, there's a great lack of integrity in the actual handling of the water bills. And then they're hiring approximately 30 workers for field work on this. So check this out. If you have a leak under your house and the meter, you go to check the meter, do you know that the meter is so flimsy that they use that it spins so fast that it burns the threads out on the meter? So you then get these excuses that they're buying new meters, they're buying, repairing, they're putting new batteries in. So again, here's the other thing, is if you think they take it laying down, or they're just ripping you off as a homeowner or what have you, follow this one. There is emails where Ernest Lau is telling the workers to tell their families and friends to not to support the Ikaika-Anderson bill because it's not good, and don't support it. You would think he would welcome the audit. You would think he'd welcome being reviewed. And this bill had already been put before, but Ernie Martin killed it and did not sign it and pass it on. Good morning, call, a comment, a question.
You know, the Hawaiian Homes Commissions was audited, and the best thing that ever happened to the Hawaiian Homes Commissions was an audit. I'm sure Ikaika Anderson has a purpose of bringing the audit to a head, and that is to clean up government. Thank you.
Well, good. Well, he should get moving then, and he won't do us any good if he runs off to Washington. Would he, if he's really want to be attentive and it's not political, stay here, brother, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so
he's doing well at the city council, and I think things are moving in the right direction, and for him to go off to Washington this point in time is a little early in his career.
Right. Well, thank you.
But, you're welcome.
Let me go further, and I've been quietly watching this thing, and I've watched all the fluff, and I've seen everybody stand up, but here are the realities. So let's go back to the inspectors. One day, one man gets 20 complaints issued to him when he or she arrives at the office. That person, that's 20 complaints in a day. In 1 week, he gets 100 complaints. Now, follow this math now. And then for 12, so in that he get 100 per week. And then for 1 month, your basic math, he'll get 400 complaints. He's given 400 complaints to go out into the field. And in 12 months, that individual will get 400 times 12, which is 4,800. And then there's 10 workers, let's say, inspectors. So 4,800 times 10 is 48,000. That's 48,000 complaints is handed to the inspectors to go out in the field annually. Now, that sounds okay, doesn't it? Here's the problem. They get 1,200 complaints per day. This is per the higher-ups now. This is me not making this up. They get 1,200. So 1,200 per day, 1,200. Then 5 days per week, that's 6,000 per week. Then 4 weeks, 24,000 per month, 24 times 12 to 88,000. So guess what? If they're getting 288,000 complaints, but they're only given 48,000 to the men and women to go and inspect, what is happening and how are they addressing the other 240,000? You know how they're doing it? They're calculating your bill, they're estimating your bill, they're overcharging you, and they're recklessly, and then you go back and you try to look at the computer. The computer does not compare or match up to the reading that they've just given the inspector, and the inspector arrives at your door, and you show him your bill, and that inspector now has a bill different from what he was provided to 10 or 11 previous bills in his hand. And then he goes back to the office, and the computer doesn't show the same thing. This is what, forget all the talk, folks. This is what's going on. Numbers don't lie. And in this case, a perfect example. Numbers do not lie. And so, if the semi-autonomous status is removed from the Board of Water Supply, we've already demonstrated that the city already has its hand and influence in the purse. Let's go back to see how Ekaika Anderson voted to and supported the former managing director Hashiro, Trudy Saito, Eric Takamoto, all people, underlings of the infamous "I want to be your everything" Mufi Hanneman. Isn't that amazing? So this thing called the Board of Water Supply is, I would say, you as citizens, forget being entertained in the afternoon seeing yet another bill that is higher than high, couple thousand dollars, and understand it's the total, the sum total of all of this, the ripoff that is occurring, the inability for the Board of Water Supply to manage its affairs. And when they can come up, and let's see how Ekaika Anderson and others voted to allow the increase in the water charges. And let's see how Ekaika Anderson voted to do such a stupid thing as putting the sewer charges with the water charges. You see, because you're screwed. You either pay your water, you're screwed. But you're really paying the sewer bill. So they put a gun to your head and never fired a shot. And you never saw the gun. So when you tell me that Ekaika Anderson is great, yes, he is. I probably watch him and be excited to see him eat Cheerios and cornflakes and all. But when it come down to standing strong, standing tall, and in fact, he was just witnessed at a Tango's with Eric Takamoto. They say, now remember this, the arsonist always returned to the scene of the fire. So what is this place called the Board of Water Supply? And why is it that we would be so foggy-eyed to see one act, yet forget all the other acts? He's a good man, I agree. Puts his pants on. He doesn't walk out looking naked or unkempt. Good man. But he probably contributed to the demise of many of the senior citizens who are struggling and having to turn their water down. Two key elements here. They got us over barrel, folks. Got a gun to our head. We need water, period. We need water to drink. We need water to shower. We need water to cook. And whoever, ever, ever allowed and voted to allow the sewer bills to go with the water bill is just completely unfair. And just, you cannot not pay it. So, again, This is what's going on. 288,000 complaints where you complain that you, at your house or the neighbor's house or whomever calls 200, and that's just a conservative guess as they represent it now. This is Susan Uesugi, who, by the way, has offered her letter of resignation. She's leaving the Board of Water Supply, but before leaving, she made these statements that 1,200 complaints come in per day. And so how then, again, I'm repeating myself, how is it that we can find that 240,000 complaints from the residents wishing to have or needing to have a physical inspection, someone in the flesh to come and visit their home to look at their meters, and it goes unanswered? So what do? Pop up the magic number. If Ekaika Anderson wants to be a good man, as we've already defined him as a good man, before you walk out the door to Congress or whatever it is you want to do, introduce a law demanding a federal investigation. Introducing a law, appeal to the Attorney General. If you really, 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 really want to become a really good man with congressional standards, well, oh my God, that was a misstatement. Even the Congress kind of slow. But if you just want to be a good man and represent the people in the people's interests, not from a political standpoint or tidbits, stand your ground. And in this case, I think if you mustered up or supported this effort to investigate and call for criminal investigations, because it's theft. You cannot know that you don't have enough manpower and you're now struggling to hire 30 and you're going back and retiring, hiring retirees permanently. And then you have to know something is wrong. But meantime, well, the evening news. We have the Board of Water Supply person here. Oh, how's everything going? Oh, just wonderful. You know, water is the purest thing that you could drink. You know, water is healthy. Oh, my God. Did you know Noah? And then, no, I don't want to hear about that. I want to hear the devil side of it. How is it that you are able to wake up in the morning and screw the people that already strapped for cash, struggling, have no money, shutting their water off when you know that your numbers are just creative numbers? I have the evidence, folks. Believe you me. And I often say this, but if there's anybody out there that doubt what I'm saying to be factual, go and ask Susan Uesugi. Go and ask them if they had a meeting recently with the field workers and all, and ask her specifically what it was that she said. And ask her what it is that the field people offered her. Or, better yet, if you don't believe that, initiate an investigation, file a complaint with the Attorney General, and ask the Attorney General as part of the investigation to interview the field workers. They will tell you, you don't have to trust the Carol Cox Show. They will tell you exactly what I've just said. Exactly. Almost verbatim. Because I got it from them. Not just one, not just two, but the many of them. So I had to be silent and watch this and watch all of these fluff pieces and as they float around and do these things, that work their magic. But the end result is if they pull the rabbit out of the hat, it's going to cost you. If they pull doves out of the hat, it's going to cost you. Whatever, on either side of the aisle, it's going to cost you, because what it is that no one is ever going to stand up and admit, whether it's on the city council side, whether it's Ron Manor, whether it's the auditor, or anyone. They've had audits before. Why didn't they catch that? Why didn't they catch the lies? Because it's a big barrel of money. And that's what it is. It's your money and my money. And to wed the cost of sewer and place it on the same bill, you're trapped. You don't have time to argue the cost of the water, because you're struggling to work that second job to pay that sewer bill. So anyway, I'm going to be following up on this even to a greater extent, and I have the evidence. Anybody out there don't believe me, give me a call and we can talk in greater length. And but I think those fluff pieces that you see, you should write in. Every time you see Lau Uesugi said that she's tried to get all of these people, the directors, Ernest Lau in, to come and hear these problems and hear this information, but they want any part of it. Because everybody right now is jousting. Well, you got Anderson trying to show that he's congressional worthy, and so he's going to offer some gratuitous bill here and then walk out the back door and leave us with what? No defining moment. Ron Manure is going to call for an audit and do what? Board of Water Supply is going to do what? Continue on their path? Because when you, it's an incentive. You don't put, as Mufi Hanneman, you don't put Wayne Hashiro, Trudy Saito, Eric Takamoto in the same agency. And remember now, Eric Takamoto was the head of Environmental Services. And Trudy Saito, I don't know what she was head of, but she seemed to have been like in every ship that was traveling in any direction when it came to Mufi, she was there as a steersman or the helmsman or the deckhand or something. But again, folks, you're being ripped off, and I know this is called a radio show, but I'm telling you the truth. They're never, when you see another, you should take your shoe and throw it at the TV station and call the station and say, enough already. You're just covering up for these people. Ask the TV stations to go and ask a dig. Ask them to have the Board of Water Supply to walk. They had an inspector driving around. Ask them to have a inspector show up in the morning and walk through the process and stick it back in the computer, go out and get an actual reading, and have the TV stations to record it. It happens. So anyway, that's the game. That's what's being played. It's the fourth quarter. You and I, the taxpayer, we got zero, and they have all of our money. And we're just waiting to hear the next flush. And that's basically what it is. They're taking our money and flushing it down the drain. And then next week, bill us again. You know that they are doing the billing for Maui and Kauai. Yet we had to pay. They didn't have to pay monthly increased charges. So that's where this is. Before, it was just, oh, let's explore and see what. But now it's criminal. Because they knowingly, it's criminal the fact that they can't even reach the 240,000 complaints, only 48,000. And that was a conservative number. Now, that doesn't address the other complaints you may have. So we'll post some of this on carolcox.com, carolcox.com. And that's the way the cookie crumbled on that one, folks. It's those are the facts. The numbers won't. So you can go out and doubt me, but somehow ask them for the numbers. Tell them to walk you through it. So anyway, on another subject, I want to talk about a little bit, just a little bit, about the sludge. But from a the Hawaii Kai Marina sludge. And I want to first by sharing with you the term, and I use it because it's the most accurate description of these situations, and I didn't coin the phrase, others did. I just think it's an accurate, well thought out, when properly placed, it's the cat's meow. So, environmental justice. What is it? Environmental justice. And this is taken from the EPA. I mean, we all got our own definitions. But so that we can all agree, you know. Some, oh, here we go again, talking about racism, and, well, you know, well, turn your radio off and go on down the dial. But we're just talking truth and facts, and if it's a sensitive subject, I'm looking to talk and share with the not-so-thin-skinned people. Environmental justice is the fair treatment and meaningful involvement of all people, regardless of race, okay? Color, national origin, or income with respect to the development, implementation, and enforcement of environmental laws. Those are key words, folks. Environmental laws, regulations, and policies. The Environmental Protection Agency has this goal for all communities and persons across this nation. It will be achieved when everyone enjoys the same degree of protection from environmental and health hazards and equal access to the decision-making process to have a healthy environment in which to live, learn, and work. So, that takes me to two things, and I must share with you right now. With this soils dumping and the unlawful storage and the grading and having been threatened at you by surtrucking and the dredging, let me say this right now, and let's stand back. There is this tendency to think that it is the Hawaii Kai community members. No. It is the association who took it upon themselves to engage in a practice. The association who represent now, and one could argue, say, well, then it's the people. Well, if that's the case, then we're all guilty for having sleazy, lying, thieving politicians, you know, because they represent us. So let's be fair and giving some justice and understanding a clear thought, clear vision on this. It is not the Hawaii community members. It is those people who are full of themselves that engage in a practice that was endorsed, encouraged, and authorized by the United States Army Corps of Engineers and the Department of Land and Natural Resources, because it is they are two of the agencies that granted the permits that authorized or had something to do with the handling and the processing and the dredging under the state. The CDUA, issued by DLNR. Under the United States Army Corps, they say that it was to be dumped at sea, never to be transported over land. Now, you, as I say in the environmental justice thing, just like you, there in Waianae, didn't know that it was happening. And some of you did, but the entire population of the community did not know that it was being dumped there. That would be the same thing I ask of you to understand, that in Hawaii Kai, citizens there did not know, even though they're being represented and they know that if they're being taxed and going to pay for it out of their fees and their dues. But guilt by association or guilt by taxation or whatever you want to say, they had to pay it. The problem here is if you... EPA says that it has this goal for communities and persons across the nation. It will achieve when everyone enjoys the same degree of protection. Underscoring the term protection, the United States Army Corps of Engineers granted a permit and walked away. No monitoring, no oversight, no prosecution, no punishment, no rescinding of the permits, because they, in their permit, and again, they did submit a dredging plan, the association did, but nowhere do we find, and that was introduced, as I pointed out last week, defined, it was in August of 2012, their dredging plan. But the permit that was issued does not say it changed. The permit was signed by the Army Corps of Engineer, spelling out that they had to take it to the ocean or dump it at the other sites there within the specific areas of Hawaii Kai. So what happens here? The community of Waianae was not afforded protection by the Hawaii Department of Land and Natural Resources, because they granted the permit, and they then said in there, there's no need for a traffic study because this material will not be transported over land. And that's just one now, and I'm going to amend my complaint. By the way, I filed my complaint early on, around the 5th of September, when I saw, after I learned that Miley Shima Bukura had received this, Kimberly Pine had received a complaint in mid-August, and their complaint resulted in, well, we're going to see, DPP is going to check to see if they can use the soil for this or that, you know. So it invited Robert Clark. It encouraged him. The lack of action on the part of the Army Corps of Engineers, the silent ship, the silence that was found in DLNR, encouraged Robert Clark to say things as he did, because if he had have been timely prosecuted or punished or documented or taken measures to correct it or mitigate it by the DLNR or by the United States Army Corps of Engineers, Robert Clark would never come on the radar. But you see, it lends itself, this Army Corps of Engineer and the DLNR, you see, they are good at giving permits, and they're good at putting strong conditions. But if you don't watch these boogers, they're about as backwards. It's like, here, go ahead, help yourself. Nobody's looking, and we damn sure not looking. So that part of the problem with the EPA's comments, or everyone enjoys the same protection from environmental health hazards and decision-making. Who made the decision to receive the dredge plan and then allow them to write up a permit, sign it in February after August, and not make this information available, or have a public meeting to say that there have been a major deviation from the original environmental assessment that was submitted? Because it didn't say that they were going to dump it in Waianae. Why didn't they require them to do an amended EA or do a completely new EA? That's the protection that was not afforded to the Waianae community. And you know now, you've heard it, the definition isn't just about color, skin, race, ethnicity, or anything. All of these elements matter. People, when government fail us and trick us and leave us to fight amongst ourselves, two communities being pitted against one another, and the referee stands back and go, I don't know. So I telephone the Army Corps of Engineers. I wrote a letter, and you can see that at carolcox.com, carolcox.com. They were rude, flippant, and actually the Bartello, whatever his name is, actually hung up on me. What I was calling for was to confirm the permit number that they had issued in this situation. Didn't want to tell me. Referred me to the PIO office. And in turn, eventually, he hung up on me. Then I contacted the corp counsel, or the legal counsel, and then she told me if I wanted to have any questions, I had to file a FOIA. Well, it takes 20 days to get an answer. So I was prompted to go ahead and struggle and find the permit myself and then file that complaint, thanks to many of the people in Hawaii Kai, mind you, community members there that provided me with this information. And they've been quite helpful. The community now. The board, different subject. They clammed up. They claimed they didn't know. They knew. So if you think the Hawaii community in Waianae is being pimped and screwed, let me say to you one thing here. The Hawaii Kai community, there's a bigger problem here, because we're talking about millions. We talk about health there, and I don't want to underplay, minimize that, marginalize any of the concerns in Waianae. You know me. But if they got a quote for approximately $2.3 million from PVT landfill to dump it there. And by the way, in that thing I said last week, the dredge plan, they say they're going to haul it to PVT landfill, and it was going to be trucked by Pine Ridge. Never mentioned anything about surtrucking. So if they got an estimate of $42 a ton at PVT, which would come out roughly the tonnage that they were going to bring, $2.3 million. So if they're giving it to a guy who's not permitted and hauling it cheaper, what are they doing with the rest of the money? That's what I want to know. So if you think the people in Hawaii are getting it, guess what? People in Hawaii Kai is getting taken for a ride financially and then still have to endure the claims of racist, insensitive, and all. I mean, they're getting the double whammy. And the people in Hawaii Kai, I haven't seen them to look at you because of your race or who you are, your ethnicity. They would end up hating themselves because that's the combination. But again, the fault lies with, again, there's Kimberly Pine. She hadn't found a news article that she wouldn't love to attach her name to for anything in the world. It's almost like the little girl in the story, Ladies First, and I think many of you have heard that. You know, she wrote the most recent one was she was found this new idea that the permit was disclosed now uncovered here. In, this was on the 18th. Uncovered that. It was only supposed to dump in these places. Well, I'd already talked about that and filed a complaint back in September 5th. So that's the other part of this environmental justice. When you're an elected official and you're sworn to represent the people in their best interest, but you end up playing games, political games, and you insert your name. And here's Miley Bay. And by the way, Karen Iwana and Joe Jordan, Miley Shimabukuro. But they, Iwana and Jordan has not written anything formal about it. But here's what Karen Iwana said 1 month later practically. In her newsletter, Senator Shimabukuro's office has received inquiries from Waianae Coast farmers asking for testing of the Hawaii Kai sludge to see if it can be used for agricultural purposes. Senator Shimabukuro plans to inquire with the city, the private hauler, the University of Hawaii, and others to see whether this is a possibility. In addition, Councilmember Pine requested that the sludge debris be removed from the Waianae and returned to the Hawaii Kai Coast. Well, again, all politics, folks. Because in the beginning, they didn't do anything. And Pine, to her credit, did write. But then if you go to carolcox.com, you'll see, and I read it on the show here, she was happy with all of that until it hit the news. And, the train is going to the vote. I better hop on that train. I'll look good later. But, Ms. Pine, I would like to share with you one thing. That Waianae community is not as what Robert Clark defined them as. You're making a grave mistake in this matter, and I encourage you to come clean and represent the people, because if you don't, you won't be working for them in the future. I've been assured of that. They will vote you down. And Miley Shimabukuro, same thing goes for you. Karen Iwana, if you ever surface, and Joe Jordan, I know you got it given to you. Well, in fact, the three of them, great to the government. So anyway, we'll talk to you later and see you next week. Aloha.
You've been listening to the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sunday morning at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, 1080 on the AM dial.